Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Daf Chaf Amid Beis, the first of the wide lines. Kala Amar B'Parshas Melech, Melech Muter Bo. So we have in Shmuel, Parshas Melech, in which Shmuel tells the people, or perhaps warns the people, about the scope of the authority of a Melech. And it's a very wide, very far-reaching powers that and authorities that the Torah invests in the Melech. And Melech Muterbo. It's not that Shmuel is trying to scare us, but rather these are the halachas, and these are this is the scope of the authority of the king. So let's take a look at Tosfos, Dibra Maschil Melech. Now, just by way of introduction, there's a parsha called Novos. Ruvain, we have these pages for you here. And the king of Israel is Achav. This is after the split between Yehuda and the other Shvatim. Achav is the Melech b'Yisrael. He's not the king over Judah. And he's up in the north, somewhere called Yisrael. And he needs a certain vineyard, which is owned by an individual by the name of Navos. And at the end of the day, we'll see step by step what happens, but just that you get the punchline here is that Navos refuses and Achav has him put to death. Eliyahu HaNavi comes to Achav and he curses him. And he says that because you put an innocent person to death, you will die a terrible death, similar to his death. Tema, Lama Nenash Achav al Novos. Why is Achav guilty for putting Novos to death? Kaman Shalorot Salim Kalo Karma. It means the following. That since Novos refused to sell to the king his vineyard, he is a Morid B'Malchus, he's a rebellious Jew, and he's Chayav Misa. Why, therefore, does Elio and Hashem find Achav guilty of putting Novos to death? Novos should have been put to death as a Morid B'Malchus. Yesh Lomar, we're skipping to the fourth line in Tosfos. The Beparshas HaMelech Ksiv Yikach V'Nosan LaVoda. Shmuel says, the Novi Shmuel says in Parshas HaMelech that the Melech could confiscate the property of any Jew in order to sell the property and feed his servants. But V'Loli Atzmo, the Torah doesn't allow. I think it's called habeas corpus, is that what it's called?
Eminent domain.
The Torah doesn't allow the king simply to confiscate someone else's property for the sake of his own wealth. And therefore, in the case of the Kerem of Novos, Achav has no need for extra money to serve the kingly needs and pay for the salaries of his servants. He just wanted to build himself up financially. And therefore, Novos was within his legal bounds to refuse to give up on his vineyard. That's the first answer to Tosfos. The Od Yesh Lomar, the second answer to Tosfos, is Debechinam Hayayachol Likach Im Hayarotza. That it's true that had Achav desired to use his eminent domain rights, he could have confiscated the vineyard of Novos, but he didn't exercise those rights. Instead, Aval Kshaya Shoel Achav, when Achav came to knock on Novos' door, he asked him, Sheyim Kurulo, please sell me the field. Is therefore Choshav Novos. Novos came to the mistaken conclusion, Sherishus biyada loma lo emkar, that since it was a business proposal and Achav was offering to pay X sum of money for the kerem of Novos. Novos decided, you know what? I don't want to part with this vineyard. It's too beloved to me. And he felt that he was within his bounds to refuse. That's the second answer of Tosfos. Now, if you'll take a look at the Gvuras Yitzchak, we want to look at two comments that he makes. So the first page that you should have in the photocopy is Shin Ches. You have such a page? On the left side, he has Tosfos Divrei Maskil Melech Mutter. Tema Lama Nenesh Achav. And his answer was that either Achav was guilty because Achav was not interested in feeding his avodim, he's just interested in feeding himself, or because he offered him a barter deal, an exchange, a purchase, and Novos mistakenly thought that he had the right to refuse that business offer. He quotes Rashi and the Radak in their commentaries on Sefer Shmuel. According to the Shita of Rashi, and Tosfos reflects that Shita, the reason why Tosfos is bothered here is because he thinks that Novos should be a Morid B'Malchus. This was the underlying premise of Tosfos' Kasha. Why? Because Achav has the right to take away the vineyard of Novos. Correct? However, the Radak, in his commentary on Shmuel, and we'll see this also in the Meiri, they hold that the king does not have rights to take away someone's field and establish possession of the king over the field. He only has rights to take the fruits of the field, the fruits that are growing in the field. Not only that, he only has rights during a time of milchama. There's an urgent need because of the military campaign that's ongoing. And therefore, according to the Radak and the Meiri, there's no kasha over here. Just one second. According to the Radak and the Meiri, right, certainly Novos was guiltless. Why was Novos guiltless? And he was not rebellious. There was innocence on the part of Novos because the king did not have rights to confiscate Novos' vineyard. He could only take the grapes off the vine, but not the vine itself. And furthermore, this was not Bishas Milchama. But Tosfos is asking this question because Lishitoso, according to Tosfos' opinion, the king has the rights, A, to confiscate even the property of another person, of a Jew, and furthermore, it doesn't require Shas Milchama. And therefore, Tosfos is bothered, isn't Novos guilty of being a Moreid B'Malchus? Now what I'd like you to do at this point is turn the page to the flip side and fast forward to the first paragraph on Shin Tes. Tosfos gives the answer that Novos was innocent because he was in a sense misled. He inadvertently, and not in any sort of deliberate way, came to the wrong conclusion. He thought, Novos, that he had rights to reject this because he thought it was a barter deal, that Achav was not exercising his kingly rights, but rather he asked Novos to enter into a mechira, a business deal, in which Novos would be reimbursed for his field. Novos misunderstood, and he thought this was just a give and take, and this was not the king as a melech, with the Parshas Melech, but rather offering him a business deal. Therefore, he mistakenly and innocently thought that he would be allowed, according to law, to refuse the deal. You know, he feels no matter what you'll pay him for this kerem, he doesn't want to part with the kerem. Hinei HaRosh Mevuar, the sphere, the ein reshus lemelech lakachas also bal korcho bitoras mecher. It means the following. According to the Rush, once the king, that's Achav, offered a sale, in other words, I'm going to reimburse you for your field, for your vineyard, then at that point, the king no longer has rights of eminent domain. Why? Because the Torah gives him rights. Here's the paradox. The Torah gives him rights, according to the Rosh, to confiscate the property. But if he's offering a barter deal in exchange, a purchase, then there must be das. There must be an agreement on the part of the seller. In this case, Novos. Ubir Dvarov. Let's try to explain the Rosh. Demekach umemkar boy das. Then any sale requires what we call das machne. Das machne means that if I'm giving up on something and transferring ownership to you, something that's mine, I need to have complete agreement and will to enter into that purchase. V'im kein, b'li das yefshel akachas osan. If the king, in this case Achav, wants to enter into some sort of a purchase, he doesn't have the rights to do so. Yeah? So it's interesting that according to the Rush, once the king is offering a purchase, then he's no longer within his rights to force Novos, in this case, to agree to that purchase, because there's no such thing as a valid purchase without das, without the agreement and the will of the seller. And since Novos didn't agree, he had no agreement, no das, to sell this vineyard, therefore the deal is off. You can't force a person into a purchase. There's no such thing. The Torah doesn't recognize that. It's not a valid purchase. Now again, if the king, in this case, Achav, would have wanted to employ or exploit his rights as a king under the laws of eminent domain, the Mishpatei HaMelech, then fine. He could have even confiscated the vineyard against the will of Novos. But once he says, let's enter into a barter deal, he no longer has rights to force this Mecher without das. And therefore, Novos is perfectly innocent. No guilt whatsoever. He's not rebellious. He's within his legal rights to say that I don't want this Mecher. Ulam, however, if you look at the language of Tosus carefully, Tosus says Hechoshav Novos, that Novos thought that he had the rights to refuse this sale. What does that imply, Rabosa, when you say Choshav Novos? Are you with me on this?
I mean, he was mistaken.
He was mistaken, right? Choshav Novos. That, again, he's not deliberate. He's not a rebellious person. You don't call him amazing. Call him a shogeg. But mistakenly, he thought that he could refuse the sale. Mashma, it sounds, that Be'emes, if he would have asked the Shaila to a Chacham, in terms of the legal rights of eminent domain of the king, then Yesh Rishus L'melech L'kachas Bal Korch B'Toras Mecher. Then the king can actually force someone to sell his property even though it's against his will. Which means that we're, in a sense, undermining the whole essence of what a sale is all about. What defines the essence of a sale? According to Halacha, a sale is a mutually agreed upon agreement between the mocher and the lokeach, between the makneh and the koneh. And Tosis is saying that within the perspective of Mishpatei HaMelucha, there's a whole new entity called a sale in which the king could force a member of the populace to sell his property. Again, to sell it, Bal Korcho, and its Mecher. Now again, if you ask me, then Novos really would have had to give up his vineyard, but the answer is he mistakenly thought that this was a barter exchange, and that's all that Acha was interested in, was offering him a sale, and it's up to him, meaning the ball is in his court, Novos, to decide whether he wants to enter into the sale, and he decided to exercise his rights to refuse the sale. But as far as the law itself, you know, let's put aside the level of deliberate guilt of Novos, or on the contrary, that he was guiltless because he was innocent, he was naive, he didn't know, he thought, he misunderstood. But if you talk about the law itself, it comes out that according to Tosis, as opposed to the Rush, we have a new entity of sale, which doesn't exist anywhere else in Halacha, and that's the case where the king exercises his rights to force a sale against the will of the seller.
Maybe it should be called a seizure and not a sale. Is the word sale really appropriate to use?
Yeah, it's sale because he's paying for it. Again, if he would have exercised his rights to seize it, that's one thing. But instead he's saying, you sell it to me. And if you don't agree to the sale is going to be valid in any event. Why? Because I'm paying you for it. Tzarech Biur, he says, I don't understand. Eich yochol lakachas mimenu bal korcho b'toris mecher. How can you call this a sale? And the sale is valid. It's a legitimate, halachically legal sale against the person's das. I mean, the whole essence of a sale is das, is that you agree to something. And therefore, the Gevuras Yitzchak wants to reinterpret the words of Tosfos. V'nireh, to be emes gam das ha-Tosfos, di'eino yochol lakachas mimenu bal korcho b'toris mecher. If there's a sale agreement, then the Rush is right, and Tosfos agrees to the Rush. There's no such thing as a sale against the will of the seller. But Tosis disagrees here, and he holds the Kaman Dischus Amelch Lakachas Bal Korcho. Since, and this is the explanation of Tosis, that the king could take it against the will of Novos, Im Kain Kol Da Amelch Rotze Shiyim Karlo. So again, the king has rights of seizure, and instead of employing those rights, implementing those rights, he says, I want to enter into a sale, and the king is very interested in buying this field. In lo yirtze limkar, if the seller refuses, after efshal lakachas bal korcho, even though it won't be a valid sale if he seizes it at this point, mikol makom moreid b'malchus mikri, he's still considered a rebellious individual. And that's what bothers Tosfos. Okay, it's true that the mecher will not be a valid mecher, but nevertheless, you're a moreid b'malchus. Why? Because I could seize it against your will, and therefore you should agree to sell it. If you don't agree to sell it, that's a rebellious act on your part. If the Torah gave the melech the rights to seize the karka against the will of this novos, in this case, which means that eminent domain, the king has rights to seize it, then if the king is being very nice to you and very magnanimous, and he's offering you a sale, and he doesn't have to compensate you, but he's offering you as a nice guy to compensate you, don't you dare refuse to agree to sell it. Again, whether the sale will be valid according to the laws of Mechira depends upon whether he agrees or not. But in terms of his responsibility as an individual citizen vis-a-vis the government, vis-a-vis the king, he is responsible to agree to the sale. If he refuses to the sale, then he's a moreid b'malchus. What a chutzpah yaki is. Therefore, Tosfos says, I don't understand, why does Eliyahu HaNavi accuse Achav of putting to death an innocent man when this man is not innocent at all? He's a moreid b'malchus. And the answer is because chashav lo, because Novos misunderstood. He didn't think that the king was exercising and employing his rights as a king. He thought he was offering him a good exchange rate. You know, your vineyard is worth so and so. I'm going to pay you double. And Novos was so attached to his vineyard, I mean, Tosfos says later on, he inherited from his father and his grandfather and so forth through the generations, he didn't want to part with his vineyard. So from Novos' perspective, he's not a moreid b'malchus, he misunderstood. But if things would have been clear, and Novos would have understood that Achav is just offering him a deal to make it easier for him, or to make it seem like he's, you know, that Achav is a nice guy, and he's saying, you know, I'll compensate you, but really I can seize it against your will, then certainly Novos would be considered a rebellious individual. But Novos was fooled, and in a very naive and innocent way, he came to the misunderstanding, the conclusion that Achav was just offering him a good deal on the market, and therefore he felt he was within his rights to refuse. Okay, now I'd like you to fast forward to page Shin Yud, which is the bottom left on the next page. And I'm making myself a note that if we get a chance, we'll get back to... Actually, you know what? I just made a change in plan. Let's finish this paragraph and then we'll fast forward. Okay? I think we're doing okay on the clock. So we are now in the paragraph on the right column on Shin Tes that starts Vinirit. And we're up to line 5. Now at this point, what the Gvuras Yitzhak is about to try to accomplish and convince us is that he has a parallel from a different halacha that applies to Melech. If we understand that parallel, we can really feel comfortable with his presentation with regard to this Mecher, which is not really a Mecher because you need Das, and nevertheless, since he has the power to seize against the will of the Mocher, therefore the Mocher is obligated towards the king to agree to the sale. And if he doesn't agree, he's a Morit B'mal. What's the parallel? The Rambam says in the 4th chapter of Hilchas Molochim that amongst the various rights of the king is lokech mikol gvul Yisrael nashim upilagshim. A king can take for himself wives from the entire country. Bechol gvul Yisrael, anything within the bounds of Israel. So everybody jumps on this Rambam, because the Rambam seems to be indicating that there's some special right of the king to take a wife. Why is that a special right? Anybody's allowed to marry her or offer to marry her. But boy das. But she has to agree to the marriage. There's no such thing as marriage without her agreement. That's a das machna, like we spoke about to sell. You can't sell something unless the seller agrees. Im kemi monafshach. I don't understand what's going on. Midaita, if she agrees to the marriage, that's not a special right of the king. Hare kol adam yochel lekachta. Any person, if he gets the agreement and she gives her hand in marriage willingly, he can marry her. Vishalomi daita, and if she refuses, then hech yochel lekachtam. How can he take her for his wife against her will? Now the Rambam mentions that he could take pilagshim. That doesn't bother me because pilagshim doesn't require das. But noshim, the Rambam is talking about a full fledged marriage, ishus kiddushin relationship, vade boy das. Ubir Bazer, whenever I see these abbreviations, I think of my Rebbe, because it's exactly what I would write for my Rebbe, Mori V'Rabbi Hagon Rav Yosef Tova Levi Salvechik Zatzal, but that's his Rebbe, that's my Rebbe's first cousin with the same name, Rav Beryl. The after Zev Vadai Shakedushin Lo Yachulu Mibali Daito, for sure he cannot force a woman to a valid Kedushin that would be halachically, legally recognized without her das, because kedushin by its very essence, its very definition, requires das. Mikomakom, nevertheless, the Rambam wants to point out that the melech has special powers here, a special authority of the king. Miskusi amelch shiochel lekachas noshim al korcha. What does it mean? If she doesn't agree to get married to him, even though the kedushin will not be valid, but she has a din of moreid b'malchus, or in feminine, moredis b'malchus. So what do we see here from Rav Beryl Soloveitchik? We have here a structure in which the melech cannot actually force a marriage that would be legal, but because he has kingly rights, if he demands that she agree to get married, she has to agree, because if she doesn't agree, she's a moredes mevalchus. So she has two options. She can either agree to marry him, and then the kiddushin is valid because she has das, or she can refuse to marry him, and then she'll be put to death as a rebellious woman. Says the Gruis Yitzchak, I want to use this chiddush that I heard from my Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik as a perfect parallel to my discussion here in Tosfos, in the sense that Achav offers Navos to buy the field off him. And if Navos refuses, then there's no such thing as validating that mecher without his agreement. But nevertheless, he's still considered a Morid B'malchus if he deliberately refuses to sell this field, because the Torah gives the Melech those rights and that authority to force the seller to agree to sell. If at the end of the day, despite the Torah's requirement of agreeing to sell, the seller, refuses to sell, that's fine. There won't be any sale. It won't be valid. There's no such thing as a sale without that. But nevertheless, I have to suffer the consequences, and he's considered a Morid B'malchus. Okay, we're now fast-forwarding to page Shin Yud. And we're looking on the bottom left. So let's open up the Gemara in Sanhedrin, and that's on Daf Chaf Aleph Omen Al. So we just have to turn the page. Just give me a second here. Okay. So the Mishnah says on Daf Chaf Aleph, about 6 lines down from the tableau, Yar Belo Noshim El Shmonaisri. So the cap, the maximum number of wives that a king is allowed to be married to, is 18. Now, what we're about to embark upon is a comparative analysis between two works of the Rambam. The same author, the Sefer HaMitzvos, which he wrote in his youth, and the Mishneh Torah, which he wrote when he was an older person. I don't want to call it old age, because he was only 60, so we don't want to call that old age. It's all relative, you understand? I mean, when I was 20, I thought a 60-year-old was over the hill, right? So the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos, Lota says, Shin Samach Dalid, writes the following. Shehizir, which means the Torah instituted a Lota says, HaMelech, incumbent upon the king, Meharbos Noshim, for marrying too many wives. For who Amro, and that's what the Torah says, Lo Yarve Lo Noshim. Ugvul Zeh, what's the cap? Shlo Yosef al Shmonasre Noshim, he should not go beyond 18 wives. Biksuva Vikidushin. In other words, the Rambam is saying the following, that the number 18, which maxes out, is full-fledged marriages. So let's say, for example, after he has 18 wives, he, the king, wants to take a Pilegesh. A Pilegesh is a woman who has no ksuba, has no kiddushin. That doesn't seem to be an issue at all. She, the Pilegesh, is not included in the number of wives. And then, Ukshahosef Aleim, if he would marry a 19th woman, which would be Bechupa Vikidushin, with a ksuba in the whole 9 yards, Loka, he gets Malkus for marrying her. Now let me ask you a question. If we would stop here, I'll ask you two questions. Let's say he has 18 women that he married with full ksuba for kiddushin. Would he be allowed, according to the Rambam, to take a pilegesh above the number 18?
Yes.
Question number two. Supposing he takes a 19th woman and he marries her for kiddushin or ksuba, but he hasn't yet consummated the marriage. He didn't have be'ilah with her. Would he be in violation simply because he married a number 19, or he's only in violation when he has be'ilah? What would you say? Well, look at the Rambam. The Rambam says, Shehosev Aleim Loka. What does that indicate, Ruvi?
That's not necessary.
It's not necessary. All the Rambam says is that he married a 19th woman. So these are two diukim, two derivations from the Rambam, from the work that he wrote when he was a youngster, so to speak. He was 30 years old when he wrote the Pirush HaMishnayos. And both of these diyukim are going to be problematic when we compare the Rambam to his later work, the Mishneh Torah, his magnum opus. Because Nirami Divrei HaRambam, B'Sefer HaMitzvos, You may want to underline this. If you need a pen, just let me know.
Just one quick question. Nothing happened to Shlomo. He didn't get Malchus.
Why didn't he get Malchus? So I think that, you know, I think we'll be able to answer your question a little better when we try to work out this.
Okay.
What are the conditions for this Malchus? So what you may want to underline the following. Number one, the first conclusion we get from Sefer Mitzvah is Eino Over Rak B'Mosif Isha Be Ksuba V'Kiddushin V'Lo Mal Sofas Pilegesh. That if he marries a 19th woman, but she is not Be Kiddushin U Be Ksuba, namely she's a Pilegesh, that's okay. And you'll see the second deer coming around the bend. But first, let's compare this diuk, this conclusion in the Rambam Sefer Mitzvahs to the Rambam in Perek Gimel Milchus Melachim. The Rambam writes Lo Yarva Lo Noshim, and what does it mean when the Torah says he shouldn't marry too many wives? Mipiashmu Alamdu. That means the Chazal had a tradition, an oral transmission. Shulokeh, I'm sorry, Shulokeh. He's allowed. He's permitted to marry Ad Shmonasre Noshim. Bein hanoshim vehapilagshim hakol shmonasre. So let's see, how do we get to the max to cap it out at 18? It doesn't matter whether these 18 women are married to him or the pilagshim. The imhosif, if he adds achas, one. Now what does it sound like when the Rambam says if he adds one?
19, doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter whether she is b'kedushin or b'ksuba or she's a pilegesh. Why? Because the Rambam is right. The Rambam is describing the first 18, and he's saying that those first 18 are either A or B. They fit into whatever category. And if he adds one to that group, he doesn't specify whether that one is this or that. So whereas it's clear from the Pirush HaMishnayos that he doesn't violate if he adds a 19th Pilegesh, meaning if she's a Pilegesh, the Rama would seem to indicate in his Mishnah Torah that it matters not whether she's a Pilegesh or she's the Kiddushin Uksuba. The number 19 is a violation of the law. Then he writes, V'im Hosif Achas, and now we want to underline the next word, Ubala, and he consummated the relationship, Lokeh. So Milshono Shala Rambam, if we read the Rambam meticulously, Nira, it would seem to be, Shegamim Hosif Pilegesh, even if number 19 was only a Pilegesh, Loke, Mishum Lo Yarbe, Udalo, in conflict, in contradiction with what he writes in the Sefer Mitzvahs, V'od, and furthermore, the Rambam Sefer Mitzvah seems to indicate that he violates Behosofa, he wrote on the page Shin Yud Aleph, Greda. Right, the Rambam doesn't mention a word about Be'ila, whereas the Rambam Ilchus Melachim in the Mishnah Torah says that he only violates with Be'ila. So we have a double contradiction here. Let's just go over it. Number one, is it any woman that he takes beyond 18, even if she's only a Pilegesh? And number two, when he marries this extra woman, is it necessary to have Be'ila? So on these two issues, we have a stira. The Rambam in Pirush Mishnayos says that any woman that he takes beyond... I'm sorry. The Rambam in Pirush HaMishnayos says that what? That he married a 19th woman who had chuppah ksuba and kiddushin, implying that if he took a 19th woman who was a pilegesh, she does not violate the law. The Rambam in Mishnah Torah Perek Gimel Melachim seems to indicate that even if he married a woman with only a pilegesh relationship, that would itself qualify or constitute a violation of the Slavic and Malkus. And number two, the Rambam Pirush Mishnayos seems to indicate that once he takes the 19th woman with a marriage relationship, he violates the law and he gets Malkus, even though he hasn't had Be'ila, he didn't consummate the marriage. The Rambam in Hilchus Melachim indicates that it's explicit that he's only going to get Malkus because he had a relationship of Be'ila with number 19. What bothers the Kesef Mishnah, where did the Rambam derive, from whence did he derive this conclusion that there's another condition in violating the law, that he has to have Be'ilah? Dilma, logically, I would have said, Kishikidsha Levad, Mikri Marva. He's already considered Marva, he has too many wives, because he married another woman, even if he hasn't consummated that marriage. And although the Kesef Mishnah doesn't point to the Pirush HaMishnayos L'Rambam, we can do so, and we can say that the Pirush HaMishnayos L'Rambam would really reflect the logic of the Kesef Mishnah, and it makes no difference whether he consummated the relationship or not. He married a 19th woman and he violated the law. Adarav, Kevin de Sfirle L'Rabbeinu de Pilachim V'lo K'su V'lo Kedushin is in Kain, Kevin de Kodesh Afal Pisha Lo Baal Mikrei Isha. He says the following. This is the logic of the Kesef Mishnah.
The Pilegish is viewed as an Isha.
Oh, that a Pilegish is different, is fundamentally different in the Rambam's frame of reference because than an Isha, than a marriage relationship, is because she doesn't have neither Kedusha nor Ksuba. Right? It's just what we call Yichud, that he designates her as his wife. So we see that the Rambam has elevated Ksuba and Kedusha to a special level. It creates an ishus, a very powerful halachic legal relationship. So therefore, if he takes a 19th woman, then he's taking a woman with Ksuba and Kedusha. Why would the Rambam say that he only violates number 19 with a Be'ila relationship, even without Be'ila? This is an Isha. He's not, the Torah says, Lo Yarmelo Noshim, right? Noshim is the plural of Isha. He's not allowed to take an Isha. Well, an Isha, according to the Rambam, is defined as Ksuba and Kedushin, as opposed to Pilegesh. And therefore, he should violate the law of Marbe Noshim, of an Isha, the very moment he does an act of Kedushin and Ksuba. Hare Niramea Kesef Mishnah, the Mosif Pilegesh, it could very well be, according to the Kesef Mishnah, that if woman number 19 was not a married woman, he didn't take her as a full-fledged Isha with Kedushin and Ksuba, but rather he took her as what? A Pilegesh. Is Shapir Yeshlomer, in such a case, maybe the Kesef Mishnah would have justified the Rambam's conclusion that he only violates the law after Be'ila, Tzarech Be'ila. Why? Because she's not really called an Isha. She doesn't have neither Kedusha nor Ksuba. So when is it considered that he took an extra wife in the case of a Pilegesh? That's only Achi Yivalena, only after Be'ila. What was the Kesef Mishnah's problem? Well, in the case where he took a 19th wife, and I say wife deliberately meaning Isha, according to Halacha, which means a full-fledged Ish with Kedushin and Ksuba, in such a case, the Kesef Mishnah doesn't understand why should the violation of the law be contingent upon Be'ila. He took a 19th wife. But Enochinami, in the case of a Pilegesh, if he took the 19th woman as a Pilegesh, what happened over here? Nothing great has happened. He just designates this this woman as his for the intimacy. That's not enough of a profound marriage relationship to have constituted a violation of the law. So that would be okay. Now, as the Kesef Mishnah is saying the following, Bishleim, if the Rambam requires Be'ila in order to violate the law of Ribui Noshim for the 19th woman in the case of a Pilegesh, that I can understand, I can justify, I can live with that. But that the Rambam should have an absolute condition that for the violation of the law in the case of number 19, it's got to be Be'ila. And that implies that even if the 19th woman had both what? Kedushin and Ksuba, that would not be enough to violate the law. You need also Be'ila. That's what bothers the Kesef Mishnah. How does the Rambam know such a thing? He's taken an extra wife through Ksuba and Kedushin. He should be in violation of the law of Lo Yarb. So we're up to Van Nira. We have 10 minutes to try to finish this paragraph on Nira. Vanira Vidas HaRambam Dehecha Shahayalo Shmonesrei Noshim Bekedushin Vahosiv Haleim Od Isha Bekedushin Lo Tzarech Be'ila Visagi Bekedushin Greva. What the Gevuras Yitzchak is going to try to establish here is a kind of a replacement. That's my own word. I think his mechanics here is a replacement mechanics. He says the following. Let's analyze what is the makeup, according to the Rambam, of the original 18 wives that the king has before he took number 19? And the answer is the following. He's got amongst his 18 wives both Noshim B'Kedushin Ubik Suba, and he has Pilakshim amongst the 18. That's, we'll call that scenario number one. Scenario number two would be that he has 18 full-fledged wives, Kedushin Ubik Suba. He says if he has full-fledged wives, then if he adds another wife, then the Rambam doesn't require Be'ila. All he needs is Kedusha, because now he has 19 women, all of whom are full-fledged married partners, you know, through Kedusha and Ksuba. But let's go back now to scenario number one, as we call it. Included in the 18 are also Pilagshim. Okay, we can work out the numbers, but just let's understand that 18 is A plus B. A is full-fledged Nashim, B is Pilakshim. Now, what happens is, he adds another wife. So he says the following. That extra wife has to be, in a sense, balanced with the fact that his original 18 also includes within it Pilakshim. So in that sense, there's got to be something in the relationship with number 19 that adds to what he already had in the 18. Are you following this, Rabosai? So again, if all the 18 were b'kedushin u'b'ksuba, then the 19th could also add b'chupa v'kedushin. So that Isha's relationship now, you know, tips the scale, and he goes overboard. And now he's got 19 wives. But let's say that number 18 is comprised also of Pilakshim.
Could you replace him?
So now you want to tell me that the 19th wife is over the... He's gone over the... what's the word? I don't know what to use. Over the threshold. Right, he's crossed the threshold. Then that 19th wife has to also somehow be similar to the Pilakshim relationship. And the Rambam holds that the Pilakshim relationship is a result of Be'ila. So let me read it to you inside. He says, Klape Pilakshim Lochshivi Hosofas Isha B'Kedushin Greda. It's not considered a Hosofa of an extra wife just simply by Hareat Mekudeshesli, you know, he takes her under the chuppah and he gives her tabas in front of two edim. Ella im Baala. Now if he's Baala, then he's got an element in that relationship, in that marriage, which is similar to the Pilakshim situation. Right? Because Pilakshim don't have the Kiddushin. So when you're talking about Kiddushin, and there was no Be'ila, that's not an addition to that number which is made up of Pilakshim as well. Just one second. Let's see. I got to work out the mathematics. Ulefize osi shapir. Now he wants to reconcile the two Rambams, the Rambam in Sefer Mitzvahs, with the Rambam in Mishneh Torah. The Sefer Mitzvahs, where the Rambam says that whatever the status of the 19th woman is, with Be'ilah, without Be'ilah, he violates the law of Lo Yarbeh. Iri, it's a case of what? Who can figure? Who can write the next line? If you're following the mathematics, anybody? That the 18 wives that he has already are b'kedushin, and therefore he doesn't need be'il on the 19th wife. The alzeh kosav the emosiv od ishachas b'kedushin loka, because now he has 19 wives, all of whom are in that same category, and they have the same, they share the same profile of being nashim b'kedushin ubiksuba. So when does the Rambam in Hilchos Melachim in Mishneh Torah require that the number 19 receive Be'ila? Ulam Rambam Hilchos Melachim Ayri Kishiyeshlo Noshim Upilagshim. That the Rambam, and that's explicit in the Rambam, is talking about a case where the number 18 is comprised of both Noshim Upilagshim. Is Kevan Shiyeshlo Pilagshim Bechlal Minyan Ayud Ches Noshim, by adding another wife who has not been consummated, if you follow me, is filo ramalo mikrio sofas isha klapi api legish. In other words, in the relationship between this number 19 who had chuppah v'kiddusha but no be'ila, and the pilegish who's included in the number 18, there is no tosefas over here, because what did you add to the pilegish? You haven't remarried a pilegish, so to speak, or added another pilegish to your entourage, whatever the word is, right? To your harem, right? Elokishabal. Oh, if he has beila, now he is adding to the pilegish,
and
then
beila is adding the pilegish.
I'm saying if he takes number 19 and
no, or just be'ila.
Well, it depends what you mean by be'ila. Be'ila means either that he designated her as his wife. I'm not talking about free love over here. You understand what I'm saying? I'm talking about either marriage or pilegish. But whatever it is, as long as he consummated the marriage with a be'ila, that is no less than duplicating a pilegish. Because what's the purpose of a pilegish? She's miyuchedes lebe'ila. Elikishabah. Ubein imosif pilegesh o imosif isha lo yavar belav de lo yir belo noshevel came bala de zeh chashev hosofas isha klapi pilegesh. Go ahead, David.
I think it says in the first mission of Kedushin, the three ways to acquire a wife, kesef, shtar, or bia.
Right.
Are they equal in weight? It sounds like we're saying...
Sure.
But so then if the pilegesh were married already by bia, they're equal in stature to a wife who's married with Kedushin.
Well, no. In the case of a woman who's married by bia, what he does is he invites two witnesses. Again, exactly what they have to see is a different question. Maybe they have to stand outside, hey, nene, the yichud, hey, nene, the bia, whatever it might be. But he is saying to this woman, I want you to be my wife. And he can utilize the method of bi'ila. In the case of a pilegesh, his bi'ila is a bi'ila that's miyachedes her for him. You know, she's exclusively his, right? She's for him and for no one else. But they're not married. It's only a pilegesh relationship.
Not a marriage, okay.
But let's just review. We have to end in about 2-3 minutes, but I just want to get the mathematical structure of what he's saying. He wants to somehow resolve the contradiction between the Rambam in Pirush Mishnayos and the Rambam in Mishneh Torah. And if you recall, there was a twofold contradiction. Number one, what happens if he adds a pilegesh as number 19, and number two, what happens if he does or doesn't have be'ila with number 19? So again, we can go through the contradiction again, but just to give you the punchline of it, he wants to say the following: there's no contradiction. It all depends what is the makeup of the 18. If the makeup of the 18 is both. Well, let's take the simpler case. If the makeup of the 18 is purely 100% marriage, right, that means b'kiddushin u'b'ksuba, then the Rambam would agree, in both Rambams, that the number 19, if she had kiddushin, and there was no be'ila, that would be a violation. Why? Because he's adding to the number that he has. Correct? Because what's the category of the woman that he has, times 18, is an Isha B'Kiddushin U'B'Ksuba. Now he adds to that same category a 19th wife B'Kiddushin U'B'Ksuba. There's no need to require B'Ila. Why does the Rambam add the requirement of Be'ila? That's because the Rambam explicitly in the Mishneh Torah in Perek Gimel Lachim is talking about a case in which the 18 is made up of Noshim and Pilatshim. Oh, so now if you want to get that extra element of similarity in which he duplicates what he has above the number 18 and adds number 19, it's got to be with Be'ila. Because if it's not with Be'ila, then it's not similar to replace a Pilegesh. A Pilegesh is Miyuchedes LeBe'ila. And that's the nature of the marriage relationship. If he takes another woman with a be'ila relationship, then he has gone over the maximum and he has 19. We'll just read the last few words on the page, and he says, "V'hinei kahai gavna shehoya lo yudches noshe b'kiddushin sheover lo yarbek shemosif isha b'kiddushin below be'ila nirin d'gamin mosif pilegesh b'be'ila yavor de'lav lav de'lo yarbek." Now this I don't understand, honestly. I think this, David, maybe this is what you were implying, that if he has 18 women of what? Of Kiddushin, but he never had Be'ila with any of them.
Something
in his now. Just 1 second. Let me just get it one more time. I don't want to hold you up because I know our time has elapsed. If he has 18 women with Kiddushin, now he adds a 19th woman. Oh, the Kiddushin. Oh, fine. I'm sorry. I was sweating it out for no reason at all. So the case is that he has 19 women with Kiddushin. Now, I'm sorry, 18 women with Kiddushin. He now marries a 19th woman with Kiddushin, and he had no Be'ila. So in such a case, he's adding another wife similar to the 18 wives that he has, and he violates the law. Now, maybe the next line is where the Nira Degam in Mosif Pilegesh Be'ila. Yavor Delam is in the game. The next line I understand. He says, Ksheshlo Yuchas Nashvi Kedush Kshmosif Pilegish Eno Over Rak Bibi'ila. So why does he violate Bibi'ila?
It's a Shah
Over Kedushin Grave. So again, if he marries a 19th woman Kiddushin, even without Be'ila, he violates. But let's say he designates the 19th woman as a Pilegesh, then he would only be in violation if he has Be'ila. I guess he's saying that once he has a Pilegesh plus Be'ila with that Pilegesh, that's similar to a full-fledged wife. I'm not sure. I mean, I would argue against this. You know, this is a question mark in my mind. Okay, Rabbi Moshe, we'll stop here. Everyone should have a great day, and thank you for joining me.
Is he assuming that all the marriages that were in the institution also had Bia?
No, that's irrelevant to this discussion. On the contrary, he's assuming probably they didn't have Bia. And therefore, if he adds a 19th woman with Kiddushin, even though there's
no
Bia.
With a Pelegish with Bia, it's not the same as what you had before. If you had that,
so wait, what's the case? Just, you know, there's so many different scenarios.
Of the 18, some were with Kiddushin, so we're going to send some were Pelegish.
Correct.
So, if the ones with Kiddushin and Kesubim, if he didn't have Bia with them, we're still married to them.
Right.
But when you add a 19th and she's a Pelegish, and you have Bia, but you're adding, you didn't have Bia with some of the other ones. So how are you adding more of what you had before?
You're adding another Pelegish, correct?
Yeah.
And there you don't, he's saying in such a case you don't even need Be'ila. What he's saying is that let's say all the 18 women that he has are all the Kiddushin, then he could violate number 19 with Pelegish plus Be'ila. Because then he's saying that the addition of Pelegish plus Be'ila somehow equals it out to the notion, which I'm not sure exactly why.
How do they terminate the relationship with the Pelegish?
Just sends her go. You're out of here. Pack your bags.
Was Hagar like that, or was she a real wife?
I don't know. I think Hagar was a Pelegish, if I remember correctly.
Yeah,
okay.
I just want to say one thought. You have a second for a thought, am I?
Yeah, sure. When you